time once again for Community Forum, and we're very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Neil Chance and Jack Matthews. Neil Chance is a retired Boeing worker with 42 years at the company. He was the former president of the IAM and AW District Lodge Local E, the avionics technicians on the flight line. Jack Matthews is also a retired Boeing worker with 26 years at the company, and he was a crane operator at the Everett plant. Neil and Jack, thank you both for coming in, spending time with us this morning.
Well, thank you.
Yes, great to be here.
So let's start out. Tell us, you both have a long history at the IAM and Boeing. When did you both start?
Go ahead, Jack.
Okay. Well, I didn't have 26 years. I think it's more like 24. But, my family has a long history in labor. My grandfather was a charter member of ILWU Local 19 here in Seattle. Both my uncle and my father were members of that union. I had some union experience before going to Boeing, but I joined the union when I hired in, and that was 1984. Yeah.
ILWU has a very rich history, labor history.
Oh, yeah. My grandfather, prior to Bloody Thursday, his name was Carl Floyd Matthews, and they called him either Carl or Floyd, but after Bloody Thursday, he was known as One-Eyed Matty.
Wow. All right.
Okay, Neil Chance here, and I started working at the Boeing Company in April 15th, 1957, and retired 42 and a half years later. And during that time frame, I was a union member just 40-some plus years. So, and as you were told on the introduction, I have worked my way through the ranks of the union and was the president of a local. And we'll let it go and move on from there.
All right. So recently in the news, we have seen coverage of a proposal, a new contract put forth to the IAM. It was appeared to be a fairly rushed job on Boeing's part, but in addition to our governor calling for a special session and the largest tax giveaway in state history for a company, there was also a deal appeared to be brokered to get the IAM to sign on to a new contract. Do you think that's an accurate summation? And what's your take on that deal that was proposed?
Yeah, it is. But before we get into that, I want to do a disclaimer. You know, I'm not here in an official capacity to represent the union or the Boeing Company. Any observations or opinions that I have is strictly my own.
And that's the same with me.
Very good. So what is your take on what's transpired?
Well, you know, Jack has seen this, and I have too, in our years at the company. We've put on our fair share of time at the picket lines, and the company walks in, they throw whatever it is they want to give you on the table, and that's it. You can massage it, you can move the money around, you can do whatever you want, but that's it. And that's exactly what happened this time. It's only this time I think it's kind of more under corporate blackmail, because they say, take it or we're going to do this or we're going to do that. And it's, you know, it's not good.
That's just exactly the way I feel, with one exception. I don't consider what they dropped on the table to be a contract. I believe it to be the gutting of a contract. And I believe that if it's ever accepted, you will see the death knell for unions in this country. The IAM is one of the largest unions left. And when the leadership in that huge union starts rolling over and playing lackey and lapdog for management, that signals something, and it's not good. Not good for the working man at all.
Well, the unions, the downfall started years ago. You know, this is gonna heat up a lot of people, but it's a fact. When President Reagan decided that he was gonna bust unions, He put together a whole slug of lawyers and sent them out saying, your objective is to bust unions. Go do it. And when he busted the air traffic controllers, he giggled every time he thought about that. He
thought that was his first official act. He got elected by working men voting for him because he really played up the fact that he was the president of a union, the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm labor. I'm just like you.
Right. But unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. And ever since, we've been under the gun. It's been an uphill battle. And it just amazes me, the middle class of this country was formed by unions. They provided living wages. And now you look across this, you know, I'm sitting here and I can see a map on the wall of the United States. And most of it is right to work for less states. And I'm going like, wait a minute, you know, what happened to this country? What happened to living wages? Why is it that people are out there making under $15 an hour and barely existing? And in this country, that shouldn't be. It's not a simple answer, let's face it. You know, there's a lot of
how did it ever get to the point in this country where labor fights among itself, the non-union, bad-mouthing union, because we have more than they have? They could have it, too, if they worked a little harder at organizing. You work in a company that posts profits, huge profits in most cases nowadays, yet you're paid a substandard wage that you can barely live on. You cuss and swear every time you sit down to pay your bills, and it just isn't quite enough paycheck to make it to the next paycheck. And instead of doing something about your situation with your fellow workers, you badmouth those that did do something about it and get ahead. And that's got to end. People have to see we're all on the same team here.
Well, you know, that harks back to a time when if I was to meet somebody for the first time and the conversation come around to what do you do for a living, and I said, well, I work for the Boeing company, and the expression that came out of their mouth was, oh, you work for the lazy bee. And that just griped me no end, because the Boeing's product has a quality of the Rolls Royce, you know? And that quality is only put out that door due to the skills and the job integrity of the people who work there.
Exactly.
You know? And so what indicates to me when I hear somebody say that is, number one, they're envious that I am making a living wage. You know, that it bugs them that I'm able to make a living wage and have a few bennies on the side that are not too bad. And it's like, wait a minute, you know, get off your rear end, get out there and do something about your situation. You know, you can't just sit around and gripe about it. You got to do something about it.
You know, although it's, to me anyway, it's very obvious, but, and I thought it would be obvious to everybody because of the way I was raised, you know, raised in a union family, and I paid attention. There used to be, actually, in high school, labor classes. I don't know that they even have them in college anymore, but I remember learning. You have a large company in one area, and that company is unionized, and the people that work there make a living wage. They get the decent benefits. Father gets up and goes to work in the morning. Mom gets the kids off to school. That's long gone. But that was life in the 40s, 50s, 60s, even into the 70s. That was the way it was here. And the companies, the peripheral companies that worked around this large, probably manufacturing, which is just about gone, their employees benefited from that, because in order for those companies to get and retain good workers, they had to start offering more money, better benefits, never quite came up to what the union could get, because you're bargaining by yourself. You're not bargaining as a group, so you don't have the necessary power to get a little more. But when those union jobs are gone, and those large companies, if they're even here anymore, begin losing employees, or giving away employees to other countries, all those peripheral countries or companies are going to see their wages and benefits hit rock bottom. No matter how bad it gets for the union company, those peripheral companies are going to be much worse off. Well, but nobody seems to understand the concept anymore. And it worked for decades. It would still work.
Well, look what happened to the trades. You know, you had carpenters unions, you had plumbers unions, you know, the whole nine yards, and they all made living wages. Most of those unions are a thing of the past. You know, about the only thing left is aerospace industry and the longshoremen. You know, I mean, it's really pathetic. And you look around and you see these people struggling with these non-existent jobs almost. I mean, they don't pay anything and they're trying to live on it. And it just makes you sick when you know that there could be a better way. There really could.
That was one of the items in the current proposal coming out of Boeing was starting at a $15
yeah.
an hour wage, which, as you've stated, is not enough to feed a...
No, that's not a living wage.
In some of the disciplines at Boeing, in hourly work, and work governed by the IAM, current starting wages... if you are what they call pay grade A, which is janitorial exclusively, I believe, it's $11 an hour. And it goes up to 19, and I don't think they even get raises. I could be wrong there. I think they do get a bonus when anybody else does, but their wages are pretty well frozen at $19 an hour after a period of 6 years. The next step up would be pay grade 1, and I believe that starts at about $13 an hour. Takes 6 years to hit your target, and you get up to 20-some dollars. And every pay grade after that, higher-in rate goes up, and it goes to grade 11. I think it's right in the neighborhood of about a dollar an hour. Each pay grade starts.
Yeah.
And the top pay grade, which is 11, is a little over $40 an hour. There's a handful of people
yeah,
in that.
I was just going to say, you can count the number of grade 11s these days on one hand just about because – the company is, you know, they've seen, okay, these guys are making too much money. We're going to do away with that grade 11 system.
Yeah.
And that'll cut the wages down. So I retired as a grade 11, but I'll tell you, the number of people that are left out there is minuscule.
Well, I retired as a grade 8. That was crane crew. There's a pretty good number of grade 8s throughout the factory in various functions. And, I think it's paying pretty close to $40 an hour right now. It was 32 or 3 when I retired. But what they want to do is to take that, and when I hired in, it was a 3-year window. You hire in at your step one pay, and in 3 years, you move up to your target. I think it was the second contract after I was there, they changed, might have been the first one, they changed. So it took 6 years to hit your target.
Yep.
And this abomination that they just dropped on the table, 16 years to hit your target wage. 16 years.
And you can't keep up with the cost
does
of living over
does a surgeon take six? Maybe he does. A surgeon probably does take 16 years to hit his target. But we're not surgeons. We build airplanes.
And with a rich history of building them well in, let's say, in comparison to the facility in South Carolina that's having trouble rolling planes now.
Yeah, they're lucky to get one airplane a month out the front door, and up there in Everett, they're stacking them out the door like cordwood. And that's strictly the fact that you have a base up here in the Northwest of people who have the skill levels to do the job. It's, you know, it makes a big difference. And I tell you, the company, you got to keep that Rolls-Royce quality, because if you don't, at the price they want for those birds, it ain't going to be long till you're going to have a real problem on your hands.
A friend of mine that I worked with said to me recently that if Bill Boeing could see what they're doing now, he'd be rolling over in his grave And I said, no, he's not rolling over. He's climbing out. He's angry.
Well, when you say what they're doing, expand on that. What are they doing specifically that is bringing Bill Bowling back?
At the time I hired in, I think was right on the cusp of the change. My uncle had been he was the head photographer for the company from the 40s until he retired in the 80s sometime. If I can mention his name, Vern Rutledge. My mother was a secretary back in the 40s and then quit to have kids, and she went back in the 60s and worked until she retired in the 80s. And I hired in, I think, like I said, 86, yeah. And that was right on the cusp when the engineers no longer ran the company, and it became lawyers and bean counters.
Yep.
And as soon as that happened, most of the jobs you did there, I mean, sure, some of them are awfully repetitious, and there's a lot of, you know, you're just part of the machine, a lot of the jobs. But in every one of those jobs, you could take pride in the end result, and people did, and it was fun. But they have sucked every bit of the fun out of the entire operation. People work in fear now. It's just, I'm glad I'm retired.
Yeah, I remember when the bean counters took over, and it really did. It changed the whole scope of the plant, so to speak. The people there, they used to really enjoy going to work. You know, it was a fun job, and they took pride in the product that, like Jack was saying, they took pride in their product that they put out. We all did, you know. That was really neat to work for a company that had a product that world over, that name was recognizable. I mean, you go out to the airport and you're out there at the jetway waiting to board the airplane. You look out the window and you see this plane sitting there and it has Boeing written on it. Now, those people that see that don't give it a second thought afterwards, because that name says quality. You know, I'm going to have a good ride. And so it makes everybody else proud to say, yeah, I helped put that name on that thing that's parked out there that travels millions of miles and carries millions of people and does it safely and, you know, comfortably for the most part, except for the airlines. They determine how much seat space you're going to have. But anyway.
They suck the fun out of it.
Yeah, they kind of do. But, you know, the fact is, once they see that name on that aircraft, they don't give it a second thought. It's built in.
To be fair, I have to say that I believe just all of my former coworkers and everybody that's there today, they must still have that same sense of pride when they finish the job. But the pride is in what they do. The pride is in the product. I don't believe there's any pride in the company anymore.
Well, you know, let's face it. The guy that sits in that behind that mahogany desk in Chicago has absolutely nothing to do with the quality of what goes out that front door. You know, it's the guy with the technical skills and the engineers with their skills that combined with the pride that puts that quality into that product. That's, you know, you can't get around that. That has to be. So, anyway.
So how do you were talking earlier about the number of companies that surround these manufacturing facilities and the people that benefit there. I think some of those people, if you read the comment section of local papers, which I don't actually recommend anyone to do, but
I do.
But these people are basically like saying, "Oh, great, thanks, thanks IAM for not doing the contract, because now you're gonna screw the rest of us over by your giving that up."
It's part of the race to the bottom.
Yeah, I was
gonna
say.
In fact, it's just taking the lead on that race.
You know,
and they don't see it.
You know, when it was announced what they were going to be voting on, the car dealerships around here start salivating because they're going to get that $10,000.
Oh, the sides are already up.
Yeah,
all up
you
and
know,
down Highway 89.
And I just chuckle at that because, you know, now they're crying the blues because the IAM says, no, you screwed with us enough. We're not going to buy into this. And so now the car dealerships are going like, oh, geez, yeah, what are we going to do with all these cars out here on the lot? Well, that's the way it goes. But, you know, getting to that contract thing, I really kind of feel sorry for Tom Hrabowski. I think he was put between a rock and a hard spot. And unfortunately, the hard spot worked, kind of won out. And he put that thing before the membership to vote on. And, you know, I have to speak just for myself, but I'll tell you, I would have taken the alternative. That thing would have never seen the light of day. The membership would have never voted on that thing, period. It was just, I just couldn't believe it. Because, you know, I put all those years in serving the union and the membership, and I looked at that and I'm thinking, God, all that work and all that effort that I put in is going down the toilet. You know, it's, I can't believe it. I would no way have anything to do with that piece of, you know what, that got tossed on the table. And I have to kind of feel sorry for Tom because, he was, you know, he was being pounded by the state. They wanted a piece of the action. He had the higher echelon of the IEM, beating him on the head and giving him ultimatums. And of course the corporate greed was rearing its ugly head and they were doing the hard sell. So there he was.
In his favor, I gotta say though that when he first stood up, he tore up the contract.
Yeah.
They straightened him right out after
that. Well, yeah. You know, when I heard that, I'm going like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. You know, Tom, I know where you're at. I know what happened, and I'm sorry that you're in the hard spot. But, you know, like they say, if you're going to take the reins, you better be able to steer the horses because that's the job.
He's the president of the local chapter.
He's the district president of our local
here. Of 751.
District, yeah. He's a district.
Our union president. Sets it up a little different than most. A local in most unions would be that office that represents the people in that town working in that industry. But ours is District 751, and within that, there's four locals.
Four locals, yep.
And each local has certain work disciplines. Like I was in Local A, which is manufacturing. He was in E, which is electronics.
Yeah, that's all electronics and electrical type stuff.
C would be the machinists and tooling. And F, I think, is clerks and they're store operators and things like that.
Well, when you have a company that big with that many employees, that's the only way you can really effectively deal with it. If you were trying to be the jack of all trades and run the whole show just with one group, oh man, you'd wind up in a mess so fast it wouldn't even, you know, make your head spin. But by breaking it up into these different groups, you can represent these groups and then coordinate, and it works okay.
It works okay. It works pretty good.
Yeah.
It's just that most people don't understand it.
Right.
Because it's different than the way most other unions operate.
So do you anticipate that Tom will be voted out of his position and is a stronger candidate?
You know, that's that gets into union politics, and that can get pretty messy, and I don't think I even want to go there.
Okay. I would never predict how it's going to work in union politics because it always surprises me.
Yeah.
But that position should be representing those who elected.
Well, yeah. He's the guy that's representing the entire group, you know, all of us. Well, not me anymore, but I keep thinking myself.
Well, as retirees, I think both of us are kind of, we're still dependent
on
the company.
I'm still in the union.
We need, you know, you read about so many manufacturing companies going out of business and all of a sudden nobody gets retirement. It's gone. Disappears. There was some laws made many years ago, I think under Reagan, could have been Bush the first, but they were allowed. It used to be that the money for retirement was like in a lockbox. It couldn't touch it. It couldn't be added in as part of the company's value. And I don't understand all the implications and intricacies of it, but that changed. And so now a company actually is allowed to not meet the necessary amount that they're going to have in the future in retirement, just as long as they see that the checks get out on time. And in a real bad economic downturn, one that either shuts down a company or brings it to its knees, you're going to see a lot of retirements disappear.
That's scary, especially when you're retired.
I really hope that law gets changed back.
And that appears to be the trend with the across the board for corporations here in the U.S. of elimination of pensions and
right.
moving people into 401ks.
Yeah, well, I know this guy that flew. He was a captain for United Airlines and flew the long-haul flights from here to Australia, and he had been putting his money faithfully into the pension plan and thought he was going to retire and live really nice. And guess what happened to United? Guess what happened to his pension plan? So, you know, you can't always depend on it.
So just a few minutes left. So any sense for at this point with what has transpired in the last couple of weeks, what we can expect out of Boeing or the IAM? I mean, Boeing's making these noises that they're going to start looking at out of state.
This may be wishful thinking on my part, but building airplanes, I believe, is almost to the level of being built into the DNA of the people that live in this area. Boeing could not find a better workforce any place they went. They might find a workforce that'll work for half the money and not ask for any additional benefits, but they're going to have a lot of trouble, as has been evidenced by all of the problems that they've had over the past 10 or 20 years with parts coming in from overseas that they can't use on an airplane.
They have to retool and rework.
They have to be retooled and reworked.
Here, yeah.
I remember a period when they couldn't put landing gear on 767s for months. They had to put dummy landing gears on them because the stuff that was coming in was unusable. I believe it was the 6-7. They don't want to go through that again. They couldn't possibly. So I think what this was their first offer, not their last offer. They just wanted to see what would happen. If we bit, if the membership bit and got scared because it's rule by intimidation once again, hey, we won. We've got them. We got them now, but that didn't happen. So now they'll go back and look at it again.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Jack, though, there's other things that are out there in the real world that's putting forces on this, and sometimes the company can't control it. And that's a backstory that's going to take a while, so I'm not going to get into that. But when you start trying to sell your widget in a worldwide market, the marketplace changes out there, and that's going to affect them how you do business.
We used to give them payola to sell our stuff over there.
It was called greasing the skids, and that's a backstory. But
yeah, and now we can't do that. So what do? We give our jobs to them. I'm just amazed.
Yeah, but there's a lot more to that backstory. But
yeah,
you're right. That's where I was going with that. So.
Yeah, like just the recently announced deal with the manufacturing in Abu Dhabi, I think.
Yep.
But as you said, that's for another time. Well, unfortunately, a half hour is not enough time to cover this, but at least hopefully whet people's appetite. We are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
You're welcome. Well, thank you for having us.
Yeah, I want to thank you for being here. Thank you very much.